The Big News Coming Soon podcast is proudly sponsored by BRB Homes. BRB Homes is Ireland's number one award-winning manufacturer of factory-built homes. We take your home from start to finish. Our homes are A-rated and meet planning regulations. We build to your requirements and your budget. The cost includes your home being turnkey and our chartered engineer's fees. Please get in touch for a viewing of our show homes, a brochure, or for more information. Let BRB Homes take the stress out of your build. Check out brbhomes.ie.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to the Big News Coming Soon podcast. This week I am in my hometown of Castlebar and I'm delighted to be joined by a friend of mine and a colleague that I used to work with, Mr. David Cawley from Midwest Radio. Good morning, David.
Can you imagine if we started, I'm sure that we should start a podcast with something that kind of catches people's ears. Yeah. So if you said, God, I never knew that you were a Trump supporter. you love GB News. I never knew that you were such a misogynist that you were.
There's no Trump supporters in Mayo, so we're all Biden in this county.
Oh, for the last few months we've all been Biden. I just go down the middle, I say, I support the man, not the party these days.
Oh, that's just safe. Listen, thanks a million for joining me today.
Ooh, I love it.
Can I start by asking you what age you are?
You can. It's not a secret. I don't hide behind it. Next March, I will be 50.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the reason I say wow is because you actually don't look a day over 40. and you genuinely don't. I'm not just saying that to blow smoke up your arse. People must say that to you, do they?
Well, not that many people get to see me. When it comes to Radioland, not a lot of people would see me. I'm not as visual.
But people must go, Jesus, yeah, I didn't expect you to look like that.
I did have one situation a couple of weeks ago when there was a woman sent me a text on a Monday morning to say, a private sit, not for to be read on air, which is, what age are you? Because I met a woman in Westport at the weekend and she reckons you're in your 20s. And I said, you definitely can't be in your 20s because he celebrated his 20th wedding anniversary back in March. So he has to be in his early 40s. And I was like, try late 40s.
And I'd say if you shaved the beard, you'd look about 35.
Yeah, there is that.
So what's your secret?
There's no secret because the visual is very different than the reality. And we can get to that later on. When I did turn 40, I did become more physically active and all that. And that destroyed me. But it mightn't carry in my face, but believe me.
Meanwhile, everyone is Googling David Cawley, Midwest Radio now.
Yeah,
and a photo will come up of you 25 years ago. You've been doing the breakfast show on Midwest Radio for 25 years.
Yeah.
Like, are you the longest serving breakfast show presenter in the country?
No.
Who is?
Ian Dempsey.
It must be just you and him then.
He's a month ahead of me. He started in September 98.
That bastard. How dare they?
I did mention this before. He doesn't have to drive 35 miles in the morning, though. And then he doesn't have to cover my production job until 2 o'clock every day. So there is a slight difference between us. But do you know, an interesting fact about the whole Ian Dempsey thing was, when he started that show on Today FM, I remember the big posters in Dublin. So the big advertising posters, the ones that said, look who we've poached for breakfast. Okay. He'd gone from 2FM to Today FM. And I remember thinking, that was really clever. Look who we've poached for breakfast. Now, at that time in my life, September 1998, I was as far away from breakfast show radio as a man can be. I was trying to think of something clever there. As a man can be. I don't think, genuinely, I don't think I ever heard a breakfast show. I don't think I would know what to do with a breakfast show. So what happened 3 weeks later or 4 weeks later was a complete shock to me and my system.
But did you have an interest in radio?
Yes. So we have to go back in time.
Right.
So how that all started was when I was 15 years, I was fascinated by DJs, as you were.
Yeah.
DJing.
Big time.
Oh, I loved it. The buttons. Can I just press the buttons? That's all I want. Buttons and lights.
Yeah.
I was fascinated. So when I was 15 years of age, there used to be a teenage disco on the Welcome Inn. It was called Teen Scene. And the DJs would be down there and I would be stood up looking over the decks at them. Just looking at what they were doing. Constantly looking until about the fifth or sixth night, one of them said to me, do you want a job for the summer working in the disco business? And I said, yeah, I'd love it. So I went home to my parents and said, got a job, mum and dad. Yeah, 15, got a job there. What are you doing? I'm going working for a mobile disco unit. So they said, really? I said, yeah, getting a fiver a night. £5 of my own money. So what that meant, on Bonfires Night 1989, when I was 15, I went into a van to a disco in Claremorris, helped set up the lights, set up the speakers, set up the decks, and got to do the first play two songs together. And that was it.
And this was in a town hall or something, was it?
It was the Claremorris Town Hall. Remember, there was absolutely feck all people there. But to me, no, it was like playing Wembley Stadium. And I was only there to help set up.
Yeah.
So for the next few years, I worked with the Mobile Disco and they were fabulous. Let's Go Disco. Worked with them. So mainly, so we'll say my friends, my buddies, they'd be all off out bush drinking or having the crack or going to the teenage discos or whatever they were up to. On a Friday and Saturday night, I could have been in Brafey House at a wedding. I could have been in Belmullet at a gig or I could have been in Ballyhornis at a night. Anywhere in the country, I was gone for my €5 just to set up the lights, be part of all that stuff. That's all I wanted to do. It took some commitment. So eventually I made the step in then to DJing. Actually, so I do the first 20 minutes, half an hour, and David here now, and I do the first hour of the disco.
Yeah.
And I love it. And that's all I want to do. So I started then moving into starting doing my own stuff.
You have to earn your stripes with the DJing, don't you?
You
do. Well, we did back then anyway.
Yeah.
So loads of shit gigs, loads of the first 20 minutes, loads of lugging gear.
Lugging gear. I hernia at the age of 16. You know, the basements. Do you remember? They were like bigger than me.
And everything was huge. Decks were huge. Yeah. Speakers were huge. Lights were huge. The lights would burn you.
They would. Music collections. I remember we had an amplifier. And it's the best amplifier in the country. I think it was like 500 watts. But we thought we were blowing the place out of it.
Yeah.
So we'd be off around. Now, the thing I didn't know at the time, and I only found out this out years later, was back then, of course, no mobile phones. So no contact. So when I got in the van, often I wouldn't know where I was going. And my poor mother used to sit on the stairs and she would wait and wait and wait and wait until the lights of the van came into the driveway to drop me back. And that could be, sometimes it could be 2 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes it could be 6 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes if we were really far away, it could be 8 o'clock in the morning. And she would sit there and then second she'd see the lights, she'd go to bed. And I'd come in like the big moody owl head in me and then not get up the next day until like 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Kevin and Perry Gollard.
I remember they said, we have to sort this out. And I was talking to the man, because they got me another job. My parents got me another job. And I was talking to the man who gave me that job recently.
Did they not want you doing this?
Because they were going, like, this isn't a lifetime, you know, this isn't a choice that we want a 15-year-old to make.
Yeah.
Is there a future in this fella doing this crack? And I worked for the other guy and I worked really hard. And I was like, every day, 5 o'clock, I'd finish. I'd go home, change my clothes and go into the discos.
What was the other job?
It was making trophies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was a lovely job.
Right.
I loved it. So I, no matter what my parents were going to throw at me, I was going to stick with the DJing and stick with the discos. So
yeah, it's a bug.
It is.
You just can't get rid of it.
It is. And I started doing more and more and more and more. And then I started getting involved in nightclubs and doing that kind of stuff and setting up on my own. And then I started getting into house music and all that kind of stuff. And that's where that journey brought me. Where I stopped then was I started kind of wanting to have a life outside of discos. I wanted to have, like, you know, go out with my friends the odd time, possibly have a girlfriend or, you know, hold down a relationship. And I do remember I was doing a disco one night and it was New Year's Eve. Always my least favourite day. I don't know. How do you feel about New Year's Eve? How do you feel about
it's
New Year's Eve?
It's kind of a nothing night, isn't it?
It's a scour night.
Yeah.
It's a scour. It always was.
Yeah, I don't like it.
So before 2000, it was always a big night and you'd have to start your disco at 9 o'clock. And then you would, by 12 o'clock, your amps would all be blown and you'd have to go to 2 o'clock in the morning. And I think at the time I was not going up, but seeing a girl. And I remember DJing and looking down and I think she was tearing into some other young fella. like you couldn't see them for the shifting. And I said, okay, I'm not doing New Year's Eve anymore. This is done for me. Done. So stuck with the DJing until, you see, I think I did it for years, but I probably did it for 5 or 6 years.
It's interesting that you got out of the house music, because I was big into the dance music and the house music, and I was doing these mixes at home and recording onto tapes.
Yeah.
And then I gave the tape to a mutual friend of ours, Brendan Redmond.
Yes.
Who was on Midwest years ago. And then himself and Pádraig Walsh.
Yeah.
Listened to it and they pulled me aside and they said, the tape is brilliant, which it probably wasn't. But they said, do you want to make money or do you want to be cool?
There you go.
And the best advice I ever got from them gentlemen was, if you want to make money, forget about the dance music.
Yeah, forget about it.
If you want to be cool, keep at it.
Yeah.
And he said, the best thing you can do now is go into Tesco or go into Downtown Records, it was at the time, and buy Now That's What I Call 1992.
Yeah.
And keep buying all the Nows.
And away you go.
And that was the best. And I was a DJ for 16 years.
Yeah. You know, because I went down... I say I went down playing the dance music route, but really I didn't. So I went one night to Ballinrobe, and I'll never forget, because they said, we wanted a big, well, no, it's a big dance night. I think we call it a rave back then. We want a rave, so we want you to... I said, yeah, that's the best idea I've ever had. So I arrived at Ballinrobe, second track in, have you any Brian Adams? By the fourth track, for the love of God, will you just play Brian Adams? So I was like, okay. This isn't quite the rave I thought it was going to be. And there was another place which had a venue that used to have a kind of a rock kind of theme to it. So it was a place where rockers went. And they were trying to change, new owners, they said, let's change this up. Let's freshen this up. Let's bring in some. So they brought me. And on the first night, it's like, you know, Father Ted. You know the one where he plays Ghostbusters.
It's the same record over and over.
That's all I had. I have one AC/DC. Just keep playing it. So yeah, I had a couple of hit and miss. I had another night where I could write a book about the disco. So I had another night where I was doing a disco, and it was, we won't say where it was, but it was a venue, and I set it all up, and I think I had my brother with me the night, and the first fella that came through the door, I could see him. He walked up the middle of the floor, hop up on the stage, and he says to me, I said, hello, and he grabs me straight in the ground, foot on my head.
No way.
What are you at down here? You think you're taking money off us? Is that what you're doing? So Plum Austin told him that my grandfather was from the area. Oh, knew my grandfather. Oh, yeah, sure, you're... Stood beside me for the whole night. I'll protect you.
No way. Is that a true story?
Yeah, it's a true story, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I could write the book on
Do you remember the worst gig you've ever done?
Oh, there's a... Oh, I do.
Go
on. I absolutely do. And my present wife was with me. So she witnessed this.
I love these stories.
It was a Debs. Right? It was a Debs. Can I say where it was from?
Do, yeah, go on.
I think it was from Balhadrin.
We've no Balhadrin listeners, you're safe enough.
But they were having the dinner, right? And I remember it was 96 or 97, because I had just come back from America and I had bought a lovely corduroy jacket with the kind of a woolly...
collar.
I thought it was great.
Fancy.
Right?
Yeah.
So
notions.
They said to me in the venue, they said, will you go up and just announce, they're having their dinner, will you just announce such and such and such or whatever you have to announce? I don't know. So I said, yeah, Grant, yeah. So I walked up the middle of them, right? I should have known that things were wrong when I heard the most act. So when I got to the microphone, I was completely red puce, opened my mouth. They all started making sheep noises at me.
Because you're wearing the furry collar.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, they're a lively bunch. They're a lively bunch, these ones now.
So you're delighted with life with this new jacket.
Yeah. So
the minute you walk into the room, they're all making bad
fun of me. Yeah. And I should have known, because the bread had become a weapon. So I should have known that they were lively. Like, they were a lively bunch. They were flinging the bread at each other. It was lively night. So I started the disco. No band. Straight to the disco. I think it was about the third, maybe fourth track in, that they were on the stage. I have one vision, and Jane, my wife, will tell you this is true. There was a girl, all I could see was the veins of her neck as she was shouting at me. I don't know what she was shouting at me, but they were jumping off the stage. They were baiting each other. There was women baiting women. There was women baiting men. Men bait. There was windows being broken. They were being thrown out. They were being let back in. I think by the fourth song, I was told, cut it. We're done.
No way.
Mm-hmm. So I said, that's a very dangerous thing to do. I said, I'm not doing it without security. And the bouncers come up, all stood around me, and we said, like, you know, we'll give you warning now.
And was it anything to do with the music you were playing?
No, they were just lively.
Yeah.
You know, do you want me playing any of that stomp stuff?
This was before Maniac 2000.
Yeah. So what I did was we had to quit it and put on the national anthem. And as I was playing the national anthem, standing up, there was about nine people roaring at me. And the bouncers took me away, and Jane came with me, and we sat. I remember sitting down. And we went into, there was a nightclub on. We went into that place and into the DJ box and sat on the ground. I was going, what happened there? I was in complete shock.
That
what
escalated fast. There?
Yeah. There was another great. There was a fellow called Jim O'Neill. He was a radio presenter. Remember Jim O'Neill?
Yeah, unbelievable presenter.
So yeah, unbelievable. When he used to travel around, like, you tell people now that the national DJs were superstars. You know, the likes of. Anybody who was on 2FM at the time was a superstar.
Yeah.
And you'd pay a fortune of money for them to come to your town to stand there and play records for you. So there was one, I think it was Jim O'Neill, and he had a tradition of playing Nelly the Elephant. You know that song, Nelly the Elephant?
Yeah.
At the end of his night. And this particular venue, they kind of they knew that. So they used to go wild. So they had said to him this night, whatever you do, you know, don't do Nelly the Elephant. And he said, I won't, I promise I won't, I won't. So they said, whatever you do, because you don't, because like, they'll thrash the place. He said, I won't. So, you could see it coming. You could see it building. Oh. And then he stopped it.
I'm sure you had to play it.
I'm told I'm not allowed to play that tonight. Ooh, but we're going to play it anyway. I think that was the last night he ever did. I think it was the last night for us all. Yeah.
You are so right, though, that these presenters on 2FM were superstars.
Yeah.
And, like, they'd come down here and they'd fill the Royal Theatre and the...
Yeah.
Out the, do you know what I did? When I was 15 and 16, they would come down and they'd fill the theatre and the outside broadcast unit would be outside.
Oh, yeah.
And they would broadcast live so that the... Whoever was DJing in the theatre would be broadcast live on 2FM.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
And I'd be sitting outside the TF in the car listening to 2FM.
Oh, my God.
Just watching people going in and out, but listening to the radio.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how obsessed I was with radio and...
Yeah, and that led me to, from my DJing, it led me to, there used to be a late night dance show, actually on the very radio station I work for. Remember that at 2 o'clock in the morning? They used to do a late night dance show.
Yeah, I do remember
so
vaguely.
So at the time the station used to close down, so it would finish... Do the national anthem, do the prayer, gap, and suddenly you would come in with Josh Winks. Right? And then they'd be like, hello, are you the devil? Because you're playing the devil's music.
So it had gone from Big Tom.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going out the same way you came in.
Yeah. And at the time I couldn't drive. So my dear wife, who deserves a lot of credit, used to drive me up there. She'd sleep on the chair while I did 4 hours.
No way. Yeah. You didn't drive.
No, I didn't know. No, I
your wife drove you to all your gigs.
Yeah, and actually, wow. I was doing gigs back in.
Do you drive now?
Just about. I was back. I used to do a couple of gigs back in Westport. There was a club called Rooftops, and it was fabulous.
Was it on a rooftop?
No, but it was fabulous. So what used to happen? You'd set up your DJ decks here, and there was a full percussion set up beside you. So there was a guy on bongos and drums.
Yeah,
whatever I played. He bongoed and drummed. And it didn't. And they were like, it was, I loved it because they were into kind of Rage Against the Machine. They were a little bit kind of.
Yeah, a bit out there.
Yeah, loved that. How did I get to that gig? The bus.
No way.
Yeah, bus. That was it. I couldn't drive, so I didn't learn to drive until I took up this. It wasn't my wife who taught me to drive until I took up this job.
I packed in the DGen about 10 years ago, but I used to bring the CDs around with me, and I remember the last case I had held 600 CDs.
Oh my God.
And it was on wheels. It was like a little suitcase on wheels.
Oh my God.
I never went digital. I wasn't able to do it.
No, either was. And look, we did reunion. We did do a little bit of a reunion for DJs about 10 years ago. We did back soon doing some 80s nights, and we had a fabulous, fabulous couple of nights. But we were all, one was bringing the technology, and we were like, excuse me, we'll do with this. We want the records and we want the CDs. And the, like, you know, your headphones when you were DJing, like we're wearing fancy headphones. Mine was a phone. It was this part of the phone.
That's right. Yeah, I remember them.
Because what used to happen was it was so loud.
The handset of the phone,
because it was all top. There was no bottom. So when I was mixing my beats, I could hear it because it was all the top. Now, it was obviously making shit in my ears.
Yeah.
But it was accurate. So you looked like you were on the... They go, are you on the phone there? Order me a Domino's. But yeah, fabulous times.
Did you have all the people coming up to you back then asking you like to play it next or we're leaving?
Yeah.
Or, you know,
yeah,
all these stupid things.
Yeah, I do remember because we were all, they used to write down their requests and you used to have to, it was like radio, you'd say, and Mary and Anne are with us from wherever tonight and it's a birthday and all that stuff. It was massive. So you did your loads of microphone stuff and I had kind of a set, towards the end of my DJing, I had kind of an end set that I would always do. So it was like nearly the same last four songs.
Yeah.
So there would be
the best to last.
Yeah. So what my idea was, you build it, and then you drop it down.
And nothing. Thanks. We're going home.
Yeah, but what you have to do when you drop it down, in such a way that there's no rows or there's no fighting. So my idea was, so I used to do things like Born Slippy and all that. So you keep building it, and then I used to finish with this piece of music called Age of Love, which was Age of Love by Age of Love. Look it up on Spotify.
Yeah,
fabulous.
Yeah.
And then when that would die, leave it for a second and a half, and then I would bring in Nina Simone, My Baby Just Cares For Me.
Oh.
Do, 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 do.
Unreal.
Do, do.
Calm everyone down then.
And they'd all dance with each other.
Mm.
And then the lights would come on, and they'd go out the door, and you go, hopefully nobody's going to fight now.
Yeah. A lot of DJs now are playing Traveling Soldier.
Oh.
At the end of the night, so they'd...
That, what's his Brad Things song? Oh, no, I don't know. Traveling Soldier.
The Dixie Chicks. Well, they're the Chicks now.
They've dropped the Dixies.
But yeah, that's and it kind of works. It kind of keeps everyone down and getting and going out the door mellow. Then apart from ready to box the head off somebody after insomnia. I can't get no sleep.
We tried everything, you know. We tried everything to send people out because you're in a lot of times you were DJing, you were in residential areas, so you'd want them to go out not roaring and shouting.
Yeah.
So we tried everything. So we used to give out ice creams, like at the end of the night. It would be an ice pop rather than an ice cream.
So they'd
be
a sparkler.
We'd say, yeah, they're going down the town eating sparklers. They're not going to be fighting.
Yeah.
The other thing we used to do was play a tape, right? The tape would, so you do the thing, the lights are on, the tape goes, ladies and gentlemen, you know, please respect our neighbours and all that kind of stuff. And in one nightclub, we used to do that live, right? So when I was 16, I was sent in behind a curtain with a microphone, right? Just tell them to drink up their drinks out the door and be as calm as they can and be nice to them. So I came behind the curtain and I just, ladies and gentlemen, if you wouldn't mind finishing up your drinks now. And one night, I was getting away with this for a while. One night, it's just this rather large man pulled back the curtain and he goes, it's you. And I was going, oh, I might be in a bit of trouble here. But actually, he went by me and he found the power switch and he just knocked off the power. All the lights went off. Everybody cheered. Had a great night.
Really?
Yeah. But you know, I decided then, look, is this the life I want?
Yeah.
You know yourself now, because it's very antisocial.
I think every DJ has a moment.
Yeah.
I was DJing in Carrigan-Shannon one night. And I was doing every Saturday night in Carrigan-Shannon. And it was this amazing nightclub. And it was so cool to be there. And I opened it and I was the man.
Yeah.
At the time. And I remember going down and all you would get is abuse from hens. All night long. Hens. But the DJ box was like right at the edge of the dance floor. You had no protection.
Mm-hmm.
Zero protection. And all you got was an oval DJ box.
Mm.
And you basically had abuse from every single angle all night long. But that was how it ended for me down in Carrigan-Shannon one night. I just got the head effed off me by this hen and I just said, I'm done.
Yeah,
and that was it. That night, I said, "I'm done. I'm finished," and I didn't do another gig.
It can be, yeah. It can be that simple, can't it?
Yeah,
yeah. And you didn't do. How long did you take a break then? For how long before?
About 8 or 9 years, and then I did Mantra there a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Unbelievable.
Great reports. Did you play Footloose?
Summer of 69.
We didn't get around to playing Footloose now. We did hope that it would be, we'd play more 80s and 90s, but it went a bit dancey. When I got down there, I think I played something like, I don't know what it was, probably Beach Ball or something like that. And then the place, you could just tell, all the heads were bopping.
That's what they want.
When you just looked across and you seen everyone bopping, you said, right, we're on to something here and we'll keep this lit. Yeah.
I don't know about you, know, but I spend a lot of my time listening to some dance tunes and saying, I could do this again, you know.
Yeah.
That'd be a huge another dance. I'd love to do that now. That would be a massive tune. People would love that.
Yeah. It's definitely something that I'm really proud of, because I wanted to go back and do one more night. Mm-hmm. And I've been saying it for years. I'd love to do one night, one night, one night. And it just so happened then that it was like my own night.
Your own night, yeah.
In Mantra, where I used to DJ all those years ago. And it was just something incredible. But there's great appetite for that for our age.
Yeah.
Because... like, we don't go out. We don't go to nightclubs anymore. And we kind of...
No, we're afraid of them. We're afraid of the loud music.
Those nostalgic nights, there's a bit of appetite for them at the
minute. Yeah. I was just thinking there, because I worked in the other nightclub in town, but we used to go to Mantra on a Thursday night.
There was great rivalry. For people who don't know, there was great rivalry. There was two nightclubs in Castlebar.
Mm.
And you were either a customer and affiliated to that one.
Yep.
Or a customer and affiliated to the other one.
Yeah.
And there was no in between.
No. And in fact, when we set up one of the nightclubs, I remember the first thing we were told was, go down and put flyers on the cars around the other nightclub.
Yeah. So you were a TF head and I was a Welcome In head.
Yeah.
And there was no change in anyone.
No. So, but on a Thursday night, I used to go out on the odd Thursday night and we would end up in the Welcome In.
Yeah.
And I got thrown out one night. And this is like a massive scandal. Your man, who's the DJ from the other place, is getting thrown out of this place. And I genuinely 100% was completely innocent.
Yeah.
I was standing there up. Do you remember there's upstairs? I don't know, is it still up there?
Yeah, it's still there. Yeah.
So I was upstairs and I was chatting away, having the crack. And this fella came up and I saw him come upstairs and I was going, geez, he looks like he's coming for me.
Yeah.
Right. And he comes straight over and he grabs me. He says, Why did you pour a pint on me? And I didn't pour a pint on anybody. And the next thing, I was being lifted by the two fellas wearing the tuxedos and put out. Now, there was a barman there one that night and he apologised to me and he said, you'll never pay for anything in here again if you ever go. I said, well, I'm done. Oh, Jesus, I can't come back in here again.
Wow. And what people don't know is the bouncers back then, they were wearing their tuxedos. These were all big, huge farmers.
Oh, big men.
Weren't they?
Shovels of hands.
They were shovels of hands, big farmers. They might have been doing a bit of plumbing during the day. They would absolutely eat you up and spit you out.
And I remember... in the teenage disco years, if they caught you like spitting.
Oh, really?
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, spitting now was 2 hours out the door.
Game over.
Yeah, game over. It was a different time.
My earliest memory of a teenage disco was the town hall in Castlebar, and it was ran by the local priest.
Yeah.
And there was no shifting or... there was none of that crack.
No.
You get a thump in the back of the lug if you were shifting somebody over in the corner.
Yeah. I've did a couple of town hall discos in my time, and it was a strange time.
It was strange. You're doing a disco and the priest is walking around.
Yeah. You had to go through them to book the hall at the time. Yeah. And it was different times, there's no doubt about it.
Let's get back to the radio then. So you're talking then, you were saying you were seeing the big billboards of Ian Dempsey around, and then 3 weeks later something happened.
Yeah, so I had gone to study radio. I went to Dunleary College of Art and Design in Dublin. And actually back to where I, when I was a small child, I spent 2 or 3 years as a child in Dean's Grange in Dublin when my dad was working for the post office. And I actually ended up going back to college there in Dunleary. I don't know what it's called now, but it was called the College of Art and Design. And I did 2 years of a radio course in there. Now, did I learn anything? Nah. There was one lecturer, his name was Brendan Balfe. He was an RTE legend. And I learned a lot from Brendan. He was great at, as he used to say, he used to pick a spot in the wall and tell you the truth. So, you know, we'd be on the radio saying, welcome back. And he'd say, where are you welcoming them back for? So they're not gone anywhere.
Yeah.
It's you that went away. They didn't go away. And so he was giving us the rules of radio so that you could break the rules of radio. So I learned from him. But the rest of it, I mean, look, there was 26 in my class. And the head cat, the guy who was over the course, called me Paul for 2 years. So I was going like, I told him, like, you haven't even the respect to call me by my right name. So... but anyway, I passed the course, fine. Came home thinking, I'm going to be the next Jerry Ryan. I'm going not working for no local radio station. No.
Yeah.
Sure, of course, that didn't happen. So I was, I had made a documentary as part of the college, and the local community radio asked me, could they play it? And I said, yeah, of course you can. And I was walking by the local community radio one day, and Henry Midlade came out to me. And he said, why don't you come in here, do a bit of voluntary work, get a bit under your belt, learn how to use the radio stuff. He said, you never know, Don, there could be a scheme down, you don't know.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what, I'll do that. So I learned more in the first week there than I had learned in 2 years in college. The first time you go on air, really on air, I learned so much. And so I used to do sound up and all that kind of stuff for community radio. And I got to meet lovely people like Nan Monahan, who was the first adult ever to treat me as an adult. I always say that about Nan.
Yeah.
She from the first day ever, she used to call me son or grandson, but she treated me an equal, as an equal. And that was just so unusual. And loved my time there. Spent 2 years there. And then I went to Galway Bay, your old stomping ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent about a year there doing Sunday evenings. And then a gap came up in Midwest, and suddenly I got a call to say, look, we're thinking of doing something with The Breakfast Show. This was October 98, and I was like, Breakfast Show.
That couldn't breakfast. Be a worse idea for me.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of anything worse. So I'll be getting home at 4, and then I'll have to go to work.
Yes.
Yeah, no, it's a no from me.
It's a no from
so
me.
So what did you say?
So I said, you know, at the time, we were trying to make plans. I would have been, look, 98, 6 and 4, 24. I was 24. So we were beginning to make plans, Jane and I. Jane wanted to come back from Dublin to Castlebar. She wanted to move home. And I said, you know, I don't know where this is going or what's going to happen, but sure, we'll give it a go. So went up, met the bosses. Have you any ideas? It was Midwest, Northwest at the time. I think we should do this, I think we should do that. And I said, not sure about that, no. I tell you what, do a week and we'll see how we get on. And I said, all right, let's try a week. So I couldn't drive. So my lovely and wonderful best supporter of my life.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Yeah, my daddy had to bring me to Ballyhonus. And he used to sit outside in the car.
So Ballyhonus is what, 40 minutes from your house?
Yeah, 40 minutes. Yeah. So firstly, I was worried about waking up. You know, you're going, oh, geez, I've never.
What age are you here when daddy's bringing you to work?
24.
Oh, my God.
So we said, we need to write this really quickly. Now, in the meantime, Jane had been teaching me how to drive. She had a car and she was teaching me how to drive, but I just didn't have a car.
Yeah.
And she was in Dublin still. So he said, I'm going to bring it. We went out to Ashton Corcoran. You know, your own neighbour.
Yeah.
Ashton, listen, Ed needs a car. And he needs it today.
He needs a car.
So the 1988 Toyota Starlet was bought that evening. Yeah, the red one. And I started driving to Ballyhonus from then on. And that was 25 years ago this October.
Excellent.
Yeah, and there's, you know, there's so many stories that go with that.
You brought back a flashback to me there of Nan Monahan, and I completely forgot about Nan, Lord of Mercy on her. She was in CRC FM in Castlebar, and you're 100% right. If you were 15, 16, 17 years of age, wet behind the lugs, she treated you as an equal.
Yeah.
And she respected you and respected the work you did in there. And people,
absolutely.
People, I don't think, give community radio the credit it deserves, because, mm-hmm. like you say, you had gone to college and you didn't learn anything, and then you come back to a community radio and you get to do everything and you get to make the mistakes without yep. anyone jumping down your throat.
Yeah,
it's the best place anyone can learn.
It is the best. You know, somebody said to me once you turn on a transmitter, it doesn't matter where it is, these days your phone is your transmitter. Somebody's watching or somebody's listening.
Mm.
And it was absolutely, I completely agree with you. And I always say to people who, and it's, there's not so many people now saying, I want to do it. Like at the time now, I'd have walked naked over glass to read the death notices.
Yeah.
You know, and, but it just wasn't happening for me. So I always say to people when they come in, I say, if you really, truly want this, go to community radio. And that'll knock the edges off you in seconds. Because yeah. they're very professional in the way they do things. And it's just a fabulous, fabulous. And I really loved my, I was only there 2 years. I loved it, every second of it.
When I was in CRC FM, and they're so vital, like we're so lucky, we have one down in Erris, we have one in Ballina, we have one in Claremorris, we have one in Castlebar. And I was working in the one in Castlebar in CRC FM. And a man called one day, and there used to be a receptionist for like an hour a day,
yeah.
and they were on some FOSS scheme,
yeah.
and they had to come in and do this hour, else they didn't get their money.
Yeah.
And one day the phone rang, whatever time the receptionist was there, and she comes in to me, and she didn't want to be there. She was only ticking a box.
I had
to go in and answer this phone for an hour a day or don't get paid. So she sends me a message. This man rang and he said, you're a mighty bit of stuff and keep it up. Who was it?
Go on.
Michael Commons.
Oh.
So Michael Commons was driving from somewhere, and I was in covering for someone,
yeah.
playing Mud Tiger Feet. And he rang in CRC FM and he said, that young presenter is brilliant, tell him to keep it up. And it was Michael Commons who drove me on to do radio then for the next.
And you see, people don't realise When they do these little things, small little things, the difference that it makes. When I was in CRC, at the time, no, I wouldn't have been, I mean, I think on my 21st birthday, I had my first panic attack, right? And I didn't, back now, that's, you know, panic attacks weren't were talked about then.
No.
The anxiety wasn't talked about
back
then.
There was no ADHD or anxiety.
I'd been burning the candle at both ends, not eating right, smoking too many cigarettes, staying up late, and, you know, generally bad all round.
Yeah.
I was coming on the train home from Dublin on my 21st birthday and I got to Clara and I had a full-blown panic attack. Never had one before in my life. So obviously thought I was dying. So I was nearly taken off the train in Athlone. It was that bad.
What was it for? What was it about?
I didn't know. Mm. It was just, I'd say it was a combination of stuff. I'd say it was college. I'd say it was not eating right. I'd say it was not sleeping right. I'd say it was pressure, final exams. Personal life, probably not going, a couple of kicks in the arse for women in my life, bit kind of no confidence in myself. And I think this all just kind of came together. But it was a massive shock to me. Didn't know, never heard of one before. Now, at the time, you have to figure, Alan, that I was like, I had long hair, I was very skinny, very skinny. I looked like a lad who'd been taking a lot of drugs.
Right.
But I had never taken any drugs in my life. Absolutely ran away from anything like that. Smoked, yes. Smoked cigarettes. Out me lugs, but never did anything else. And came home off that train that day. I remember my parents meeting me off the train that day, and I thought I was dying. Like I said, I've had an episode. It's huge. Something's happened. There was a man on the train. He worked on the train, and he talked to me that day. I'll never forget. He talked to me the whole way from Athlone to Castlebar as I was lying on a table going, I don't know what's going wrong with me. I don't know what's going on. And he was looking at me. He said, It's the Irish way. He said to me, the very same thing happened to me one day. I was at a wedding. I was sitting there and suddenly I couldn't breathe and the sweat was coming out of me.
So you're lying on a table thinking you're dying he's reciting an episode that he had.
And he was, through that, he was actually calming me down.
Yeah.
So when I came home, I went back to college thinking, it was one episode. It's never going to happen again. It happened like that was the Friday. It happened the Sunday, and I was back in college. And I always say that your friends, your family, are the most lovely people in the world, but sometimes your friends are the people you really, really need. And I have 6 or 7 friends that I've had since I was 4 years of age, and they will still be standing beside you when the shit hits the fan, or they'll be the first to kick your hole when you're being a fool, or give you advice, or they're always there. Always there. You have WhatsApp groups with them, still calling each other the same names we did when we were 15. I say to my kids now, the questions you're asking your friends now, I'm still asking mine at 50, you know. But anyway, so they went back up to them, and I remember one of them saying to me, we're going to the doctor tomorrow now and we're going to sort this out, whatever it is. And at the time, again, no Google. I don't know what's going on with me. I don't know what's happening. Went to the doctor. Doctor kind of figured straight away, okay, this fella's having a bit of anxiety attacks. So I remember he gave me a jar of tablets. Little thing of tablets. And I remember going, leaving that office going, I'm never, ever, ever going to take one of them. I don't want to be a person who has to do that.
Yeah.
So I carried them in my pocket for like a year. By the time the year was up, they were mush. Never took one of them. Said, nope, I'm going to try and battle this a different way. I definitely don't want to go to the tablet route. So again, my biggest supporter, I said, you have to reach out every now and then and say, I need help with this, you know. I don't really know what's going on. So my dad said, well, we'll sort this out, whatever it is. We'll sort it out. And I began my journey then through anxiety, which was at 21, you know, and did forms of everything to try and sort it all out. Give myself a bit of confidence, did a bit of cognitive work, which was work. And I was going, I don't want to work. I just want this to work. I want to just feel like me again. And the cognitive stuff where you have to write stuff down, challenge your thoughts and all. I was like, oh God, this is way a bigger hole than I thought it was. I thought it was like...
Where did you learn that cognitive stuff then? Or where did you see it?
I had to go to see a person.
Really?
Yeah, and at the time now, you like these days, it's...
No seeing people back
then.
No,
there was nobody to see.
No.
There was no open doors or somebody saying, come in here. And doctors were straight away giving you a tablet. So it was my dad had to go and find somebody. And found a person who worked with me for a few weeks, gave me exercises. I said, this is beginning to make a little bit more sense.
It probably sounded like witchcraft back then.
Yeah.
This person telling you to do these exercises.
At the time, of course. You don't want anybody to know. Because
it was just have a cup of tea there and walk it off.
Yeah. Why don't you have a pint?
Yeah.
You know, you feel, I used to say to people, They don't understand how you feel behind your eyes.
Mm.
You know, and now I know. You look at people now, nobody knows what's going on in anybody's life. You know, and has it gone away? Never. It's always been there simmering along. And you know, when we talk about 25 years of Breakfast Radio, probably because of that, that's the reason why I'm probably there 25 years as well. Because that lack of confidence is, or that bubbling always underneath thinking, you're not good enough now. Someday they're going to catch you out. You know that, that kind of feeling all the time.
Wow.
You're running on high anxiety all the time. So anyway, did that journey, but it was CRC, that solved an awful lot for me. And it gave me the confidence to go on. It gave me the confidence to go on to Midwest to start our breakfast show. It gave me the confidence to get married and all that kind of stuff. And it, like, it resurfaced every now and then, you know, birth of my first child resurfaced then for a little while. Bit of stress going on. Did a different form of, you know, I would try anything at this stage. So I did breathing exercises, which are fabulous. Tried different kind of forms of therapy. For myself, didn't tell anybody, just did these things on my own just for myself.
Mm.
And I found out what works for me when I turned 40. And that was getting a little bit fitter. That was, for me, it was exercise.
Doing a bit of running.
Get out and do something.
You don't strike me as a smoker. You don't look like a smoker.
Yeah, well, you know, I smoked until I was 27. And my boss, Paul Claffey, is the reason I stopped smoking. Because at the Christmas party when I was 27, I was standing there with me cigarette, and he said, "Jesus, you smoking long?" And I said, "Yeah, I was smoking since I was 13." And he
since
says,
"Since you were 13?"
Yeah, yeah.
Did your parents know?
Yeah, they. Well,
oh
they,
my god!
They didn't. They did, but they didn't.
Yeah.
So yeah, smoking away. Like, it was so funny because when I go off to do the discos at night, I'd leave, "Bye, Mum and Dad." Come back at the end of the night, "How are you, Mum and Dad?"
20 major smoked at that stage in a packet of ham.
Yeah, and he said to me at the Christmas party, he said, "I tell you what," he said, "I'll do a bet with you. You go from the 1st of January to Easter Sunday without smoking." And I remember this clearly in my head. He said, "I'll give you £300 because it was pounds at the time.
£300?
Yep.
That was like a week, that was like a month's wage.
It was a lot of money.
Yeah.
So that was 2000. And so we went to Euro that January 1st.
Mm.
So we continued on anyway. I got to the 1st of January. I said, "Sure, look, I'll give it a go." And I worked in the cycle of threes. 3 minutes, 3 hours, 3 days. That's the way I looked. So I said, "You've gone 3 days. You're not going to go back 3 days. Keep just going to three. You used to love a cigarette on the way home from work in the car.
I'd have
swapped that for an apple." And said, "Right, okay." So that's that habit done. Kept going. Finally got to my 3 months, got to Easter Sunday, was off the cigarettes. Went, "That is brilliant." Didn't see me £300. So we were at the following June, which would be a couple of months later, we were at a colleague's funeral and we were standing waiting and a couple of people lit up cigarettes. And my boss said to me, "Oh, did you ever do that thing with the cigarettes?" And I said, "Yeah, I give them up." "And did I ever pay you?" And I said, "No, you didn't."
"No way."
Yeah. And he said, "Hold on, no." And he went to the pocket, ruffling around, shuffling, puffling. And it was €300 at the time, because it had gone from pounds to... I thought I got robbed a bit there.
Hang on till I do the calculations here. You owe me €347.
Yeah, and never, and that was it.
And he paid up?
Yeah, that was it.
Never and you smoked, never smoked since?
Never smoked since, yeah.
Well, fair fucks
so
to him.
People always say that, "How did you give up the cigarettes?" I say, "It was my boss who did it," yeah.
Brilliant.
Absolutely. And best decision I ever made. One of the best decisions I ever made. I made a lot of good decisions. Not a bad decision, but a lot of good decisions. And that was certainly one of them. And then I think that led to... Because at the time, like, cause married, small kids... Bit of weight put on, not very physical. Mm. Breakfast show catching up on me. This does happen, and I know I'm interested to hear what you, because you, how long did you do breakfast show for?
Oh, yeah, I could only do it for 2 years.
So, the plan is that you deliver the package every morning, right?
Yeah.
There's that happy fucker. Look at him there now, smiling every morning. How are you on there? First question: how are you so happy every day?
Yeah.
And the reality is that you're not, right? So
you're performing.
You're performing a lot of the time. If you get to the level where people think you're doing your job right, but sometimes it can take a lot out of you. So, you know, I've talked to this other breakfast show presenters. You could be physically exhausted by the end of one when you're really struggling to find something. Sometimes it comes up. It's like a podcast.
Yeah.
That was brilliant.
Yeah.
We should do this forever.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's just, it can be hard and it can be difficult. Times of the year, you're looking facing roads and dark mornings and all that, it can be difficult. So when I was in, we say in the noughties, you'd come home from work at 2 or 3, small babies in the house, nobody's sleeping right, and you're beginning to put on a bit of weight. And the next thing, you know, you start finding yourself being cranky for no reason. I kind of, you find you say nasty things to people and you don't mean them.
or even a bit of road rage, and you're like, what are you pulling out there, you bollocks? And then you say to yourself, hang on now a second, why did I get ticket him pulling out of a junction?
So am I passive aggressive? Is there a bit of anger coming out of me here that's leaking out? So I'm the nicey, nicey, nicey Mac fuck on the radio in the morning, and suddenly I'm the angry, angry, going home angry.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, so I didn't know what the answer was. And the next thing, lo and behold, I think it was 2010, the Mayo Pink Ribbon cycle. It had started the year before, I think. Mm. And Tommy Maron was on the radio with me one morning, and I swear off the top of his head, he just goes, why don't we do the Pink Ribbon cycle? And I said, what?
I couldn't think of anything worse.
Yeah, what are you talking about? Sure, I haven't cycled since I was 13 or 14. Yeah, we'll do the Pink Ribbon. You're signing up. You know the way you be. You just go, okay, but do we have to do, how long is it? And he's 100 kilometres. But look, we'll do the first bit. So we'll get our, you know, we'll go to Ball. We'll cycle from Castlebar to Ball, 10 miles, maybe Claremorris if we're feeling good.
Throw the bike in the van.
And we'll come back home, and it'll just be a thing to get people moving and to get, and I was like, okay.
Yeah, no, to be fair to him, he's always very good like that, getting fundraisers going. And
yeah, pushing, and making you push you out of your comfort zone, which I think is a massive thing. So I said, I don't have a bike, thinking that this is how I'll get out of it. Right. I don't have a bike. Cycle shop says, we'll give you a bike.
Oh no.
So bike arrives the next day. I honestly, Alan, I did about I think I did 12 kilometres was the most I had done. And myself, Tommy and Petrina took to the roads on that faithful May morning, and we ended up doing the whole 100 kilometres
with no practice.
Very little.
Right.
And I remember, because we came in at Ballyvari, and we had, and anybody who knows Ballyvari to Castlebar, we used to go to the wind tunnel, right? Because so we got to Ballyvari, and Tommy shouted, this is easy. It's not quite what he shouted, but he said, but by the time we got to the roundabout in Castlebar, he was like, that was not easy. So couldn't walk for a few days after it. It was horrendous, the pain. But I kept the bike, and I did a bit of cycling and a bit of cycling and a bit of cycling, and then it became my thing. So I started doing a bit more cycling, doing the Pink Ribbon every year, kept my fitness levels up, dropped a bit of weight, felt better about myself. And then when I turned 40, I started doing a little bit of running. It's just a small bit of running, a little bit of running, kilometre here, kilometre there. Ended up doing, I got up to 20 kilometres. Oh, massive. Friday night, delighted. Head off, 20 kilometres, come back home, pizza, coke, lovely. Felt great. Body gave way. So now I do a bit of cycling, not a lot, but a bit of walking.
Do you remember the bike shop that gave you the bike?
It was Pather, yeah.
Pather Leonard. Mm. Another Snugborough legend.
Yeah. So yeah. He was in Pather, came and he said, "That you've no excuse now." Thanks, Pather.
It's a wonder he didn't send you an invoice 6 months later.
No, but I did buy the bike.
Oh, did you?
I did. Yeah. I bought the bike. Oh, very good. No, I did. And I still have it. And, you know, I'm one of those people now that I'm not in a cycling club. And if I do go cycling, which I haven't in quite a while, I could be 20 kilometres from home going, Jesus, I hate this. I just want to be home.
So when I was doing the breakfast show in Galway Bay FM, I was getting up at the same time as you around 4 o'clock in the morning, but I had to drive to Galway.
Yeah.
And it was the drive that was
killing you,
because you had an hour done in the morning of concentrating in bad weather and bad roads. And then what people don't realise is, in breakfast radio, you don't have a producer.
No.
You're doing everything yourself.
Yep.
And then you do your show for 2 or 3 hours, and then you have other jobs to do.
Yep.
To clock up your 8 hours.
You ain't walking home. Like, no, you're not walking out the door.
You're not going out the door at 9:05 saying, good luck and fuck you.
Good luck now.
Yeah. You have to go in and do production, or you have to do marketing.
The real job.
Whatever job, until 1 or 2 o'clock, and then go home.
And then go home, yeah.
And then you're feckin' bollocks.
Yeah.
And then you're going to bed at 8 or 9 o'clock. What time do you go to bed at?
So it took a while for me to find my schedule. So I go to bed now these days. I might bring my tablet with me and go up to bed at about 9:30. And I might watch a bit of telly until 10, and then luckily I sleep okay, which is good, because I've gone through the phases with the no sleep, which is horrendous. That's horrendous.
Mm.
When you go through those patches, they're horrendous. But then what I do is, on a Friday afternoon, when I go home from work, I'll go to bed for an hour. And I wake up from that feeling like a pig, but I go outside, do a bit of walking, whatever, then I feel great. Saturday, I feel fine. Saturday night, I could do whatever. Sunday morning, no matter where I've been on Saturday night, up you get on Sunday morning at 7.
To get back into the routine.
Or else you won't sleep Sunday night.
And you're doing that for 25 years.
Yeah, and no restaurants, no cinema, no pub during the week, no meeting up with the lads, no indoor soccer, none of that during the week, because the commitment is, the responsibility is that you have to be there. So that's I was given that job 25 years ago. Your job is to be the first voice on the radio at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I've taken that seriously ever since.
Has there ever been a time where you said, I'm not doing this anymore?
Yep.
And what pushed you on then to keep doing it?
There's lots of reasons. I would say December 2003, actually 5 years into it, I thought I couldn't do another one, not another one. And I told him, I said, you know, done now, can't do any. And then I suppose then it kind of eased off again. Kids came around, that made it all right. I don't know, Alan, but there has been, like, you know, I stand there and there has been an odd Sunday evening where I've stood at the bottom of the stairs going, I can't do this week.
Yeah.
I just can't do it. I need a break.
Because I remember the exhaustion of only doing it for 2 years. And I remember just being physically and mentally
drained,
completely exhausted. And I just said, I can't do this anymore.
No.
I just can't physically do it.
Yeah. So that leads me on to the next question. So why do we do it? Mm. Right. So what drags you through those times? Because then I would start thinking, like, if I was on that downward pattern of why am I doing this? Why am I doing this to my body? Over half my life now at this stage. So why am I doing this? What's my legacy? What's your legacy? So if you're a builder, you build that house. You can bring your kids to that house and say, I built that house,
yeah.
I fixed that. I did this. So if you're in radio, the words you say disappear, never to be heard again. When you work making radio ads, you come in on the Monday or the first day in January, you press delete. They all go and we start again. So sometimes you go, what am I doing or what am I leaving behind? So you just go, Jesus, you know, is this making a difference to anybody? Or what am I at? And every now and then you get something that tells you it is making a difference to people. And as we celebrated 25 years there a couple of weeks ago, I got one message from a listener. It actually came in. It came in later in the day. It didn't come in for me. It actually was sent to somebody else, but it was passed on to me afterwards. And I think, you know, because I always said in my mind for the last 3 years, I'll get to 25, see where we are, see where the body is, see where the mind is. And I haven't decided yet. But this person said, I love the tribute you did for David this morning, blah, 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 blah. I hate blowing smoke up my own hole. You know, I've had a few, and they put in expletives, years with bereavement in my family, and there were days I didn't want to creep out from underneath the duvet, but once David came on in the morning with his lovely, cheerful, positive, lively disposition, he did my broken heart the world of good, and I'll never forget him for that. So he's so suited to that show, blah, 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 blah. So if you see David today, give him a special nod and maybe even a hug for me. Lord Almighty, do not mention my name on the radio again, thanks.
Ah, that's lovely. That is lovely. And I'm not blowing smoke up your arse, but you are very easy to listen to, and you've always been very easy to listen to, and you know, you don't try too hard.
No.
You're just yourself for the 2 hours, and yeah. you're a bit of crack.
You just be who you are.
Yeah,
yeah. And some days it flows off you. I don't know about you. You see, it's the social media thing. I mean, I'm in awe of people who work in the social media business, because I mean, I have a Twitter account with a couple of thousand followers, and I joined TikTok, by the way.
Did you?
Yeah.
So you went straight from Twitter to TikTok.
I got to TikTok.
You bypassed Facebook, Instagram, Weibo.
I was on Facebook until the 9th of February 2019, and I came off it and never went back on it again. And Instagram, I just know I'd spend my life on it.
Yeah.
But TikTok kind of, I was like, oh, but I haven't posted a video, because I would overanalyze everything.
Yeah.
Does that happen?
Oh, it's a nightmare. Like, and even with you on about the no sleep, and like, there's savage anxiety that comes up being on social media that people don't understand.
Yeah.
And I can't switch off like from that. I can't upload something and leave it there and let it do its own thing. Like, I have a video lately. Your dog stops when he hears a car.
Yes.
And my dog does the same. And I put up a video lately of Cookie doing it. And sure, Jesus, I'm getting, like, the amount of DMs I'm getting saying that I don't know how to train a dog. The dog could get a fright by something in the bush and jump out in front of a car. This dog is 15 years old, has walked that road every day for the last 15 years.
Yep.
There's no one that knows that dog better than me.
Yep.
But that last message before you go to sleep will kind of sit in your head, bubbling away there for a few hours. Or the first one you read when you wake up. And you'd be like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
You know?
So for me, like, even I was saying, I'm going to do something clever for me TikTok. I don't have anything clever in me. I would be thinking that I'm going to, a lot of the stuff that happens, particularly on my radio show, and I'm sure you're the same, it's organic. It happens. You go, oh, I'll do that now.
Yeah.
So I'm one of those people that if you told me I had to stand in front of 5,000 people tomorrow morning, I would shit my bricks all night tonight and overthink about it and then not do it. But if you told me that there's 5,000 people outside here now, there's a microphone, I'd do it now. If I didn't have to overthink it, I'd just do it.
Yeah.
So when it comes to social media, I'd have to hit the post. Because I would do, I certainly, when doing podcasts or when you're doing your radio show, I sit afterwards going, could you have done that better? So where do you draw the line on the doing that better?
Yeah.
When is enough enough?
No, you're definitely your own worst critic, aren't you?
Yes.
All the time. And you're thinking to yourself, yeah, I could have done better there.
Yeah. And the reality is a lot of people don't give a shite. Don't, well, particularly in radio terms, they don't notice.
I spoke about this on a podcast years ago, or I can't even remember which one it was, but I remember I've worked in Shannonside Radio, I've worked in Galway Bay FM, and I've worked in Midwest, and I've worked in community radio stations. There's something different about Midwest radio listeners.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They let you away with nothing. They let you away with nothing. So, you know, you can be on Galway Bay FM at 7 o'clock in the morning and you can say something completely outrageous and no one gives a shite.
Yeah.
Genuinely, no one gives a shite. You come down to Ballyhonus and you go in there and you say something at 10 past 7. Well, the screen will light up. And then you're shitting it. Tommy Maron's coming through the door at 8 o'clock. Is he going to have heard that I've said that? Or has he got a text or has something happened? They let you away with nothing.
No.
And there was one morning I had the privilege of filling in for you many mornings. Yeah. And I really enjoyed it. But there's one listener. There's one listener that lets you away with nothing.
No.
And is really disappointed every time you take a day off. Every time you take a day off, it's like, oh, David's off. So yeah, that's grand. And look, it's hard enough to do this job. Yeah. You're getting up at 4 o'clock. You're driving to Ballyhonus. You're trying to get into the zone. You're trying to be the best person you can be. And you're trying to do a safe job. In your own head, you're like, right, I want to do a good job that David's proud of me. But I also want the listeners to be happy with me.
Yeah.
And I want the boss to be happy. Mm. And you have all these things going on in your head.
Mm.
And ultimately, you're just filling in. And you're trying to keep your listeners happy until the Friday, until you come back on the Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not getting a load of text messages on Monday saying, Christ.
Thank God you're back.
Who was that book? So I remember going in one morning and the first thing we do is the news comes on at 7 o'clock. And then the first time we're on air is we're reading the weather. And the screen is here on your left and the WhatsApps are there. And I remember looking at the weather going, this morning will be bright and breezy and blah, blah, blah. And I'd say three words into the weather message on the screen. When's David back? And you have to go and do 2 hours.
With your confidence on the ground.
Your confidence is on the floor. All you've said is, today will be bright and breezy. And the first thing, that person had it wrote. They had it wrote. They knew you weren't going to be there. They had it wrote. They were waiting to send. I'm going to wait until this fucker starts talking. The weather jingle in, bang. That's you f***ed for the rest of the day now. And your confidence is shot.
We have so many, the Midwest Radio, the radio I work for, that I'm lucky enough to work for, as you know, and it's more than a radio station for people. So, for example, I'll give you an example of how, and for your listeners from around the country who don't understand this whole thing, is how important the radio station is. So if there was a storm, right, so there's a stormy night, and I get to work at whatever, 6 o'clock in the morning, and I just know that there's people there and they're nervous and they're whatever. So I say, I'll go on a bit earlier. You know, I don't normally start my show till 7. So I'll come on at 6:10. And I'll just go and I'll say, good morning, it's David here. I'm a little bit earlier than usual, but I just, bang, screen will absolutely light up. We're going, thank God we heard a voice. All we needed was a voice.
Can we just spend a bit of a few minutes on this? Because I think an awful lot of people and a lot of my listeners take radio for granted and they listen to Today FM and iRadio and 2FM. And it's just there. It's just noise in the background. Midwest Radio is the authentic, original radio in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
Midwest Radio and Highland Radio, they're on a par and they're there for the community.
Yeah.
They're there for the people. They're a friend.
Yeah.
And they're providing a service way more than just advertising and music.
Yep.
And what people don't realise is when there's a storm, 2 or 3 days in the build up to the storm, our bosses are gone off making sure there's diesel in generators.
Yep.
Making sure that no matter what happens during this storm,
we stay on.
We're on air. And that's the priority.
If it means sleeping in the chair, and it has been sleeping at your desk.
It has happened.
It has happened, yeah. It is that incredible contact. For example, when they ring, they're not, so when the electricity goes in a place, they ring us.
Yeah.
They don't, you go, did you ring the ESB?
But my earliest memory of you would be going to school on a frosty morning.
Oh yeah.
And you'd be tuned in to David and you'd be texting, is St. Charles still open? Is Snugborough School still open? And you'd be there waiting and you'd be listing out the schools.
Listing them out.
This morning, St. Pat's is closed, St. Teresa's is closed, St. Mary's is closed.
Yeah.
And you're just there waiting for your school to be read out.
And the funny thing about it is, if you didn't mention the school, they've never forgotten it. So I meet people in their 30s now going, oh yeah, Drumgallon never got the day off. But there was a fella, I used to say, if there was a sniff of frost in the air, when I would reach the studio, there would be a fax from one particularly secondary school. They were closed. Yeah. Oh, at the second really? They were going, I could see two faxes. One was the weather, one was this school saying, we're remain closed today.
The principal in there didn't give a shite.
Didn't give a shite. And they were probably right. But it is,
this was before text messages, before social media.
There was no WhatsApp groups.
We
or
had
anything
to
like
find
that
out through the radio.
And the other thing was, you know, no matter what, and I'm sure it was like that for you in Galway, no matter what the road conditions were like, or what the most snow there was, you had to get there because you had to be that voice. Yeah. So there were mornings like, I don't know how I got through some of the mornings, 2009, 2010, not sure how we made it.
Yeah.
You know, in one way, it was the lovely to hear you on the radio. The other way, people used to say, ah, Christ, he made it.
Yeah.
So now I have to get up.
Exactly.
There's no, and then, you know, we had not a weather, but when we had the pandemic, the radio found itself in a totally different area. Again, it became really important to people to be a friend, a voice. I mean, I don't think people from the rest of the country would know how important it became during the pandemic, during lockdown. You know, our boss has said, right, we're dividing everybody up. All presenters will be divided up. David, you go to Castlebar. Tommy, you go here. You go to there. You go all different studios so that nobody's with each other. But the most important thing we do is we keep going. We do everything as we normally do. People keep them and just keep people. They want to hear a voice. They want to feel normality. And I think reflecting on that now a few years later, that was a massive, massive, massive bonus for the radio station. For it's not in listenership or advertising. That's in just people's goodwill towards you. Because you were there. You were a voice.
I was broadcasting from my bedroom. They gave me a unit and a microphone. And every day I'd take the mattress off my bed and stand it up behind my desk.
Yeah.
And I was there in my bedroom broadcasting with a mattress standing behind me.
That part was amazing. So, you know, when people say, what did you do during lockdown? We worked. Everybody worked. We kept continued working because you had to.
And the days we were going to Ballyhaunis then, there'd always be a checkpoint in Bohola. Every day this COVID checkpoint was there. And you'd get to the checkpoint and he'd say, you're going to Midwest.
Yeah.
Because you had to stay within your 5 kilometres.
Yes, that was right,
And we were essential workers.
We were essentially.
But you did feel like, I think, looking back now, I think the whole COVID thing was a feckin' disgrace the way we handled it. But during that time, you had a great sense of pride saying, I'm going to work.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to do something. I'm going to be that voice on the radio. And whether we were only going into Ballyhaunis to go making banana bread for the crack, thousands of people were coming along making banana bread with us. And I remember one day uploading this banana bread recipe and looking at all the clicks it got. And by the time we had come off air, 3,500 people had clicked on to the recipe of this banana bread that Jerry Glennon was making in the morning. And that's real radio that I feel privileged to have been a part of.
Yeah.
Because you don't get that in other stations.
You're just
noise in the background.
Yeah.
But in Midwest, you're actually part of the community.
And you know, like, you know, you talk about things like, you know, if Jerry decided to make some sort of spud dinner for the show, and he'd just go across to Bridie's house across the road. Really, genuinely, we'd go across to Bridie. Oh, yeah, Bridie, can we use your cooker for a while? Come in, lads!
And we'd go in the next morning. This is all during lockdown. We'd go in the next morning and I'd say to Jerry, you know, the spud you made in the microwave there, it has 500,000 views.
Yeah, and
we'd be blown away by this. Yeah. It was such a good time.
It was amazing. I mean, you know, I don't know how well I would have done in lockdown if I didn't have the job. You know, sometimes...
That's true, too.
It became an essential. It gave me a purpose to get out of bed in the morning. I could have easily put back on lots of weight.
Yeah.
You know, or I don't know where I would have been without the radio at that stage, because it gave me a purpose to get up every morning. You know, so often we give out about our jobs and 4 o'clock and starts and all that. But sometimes, actually, you need the job more than the job needs you sometimes. And I think that's really important. And that led me in lockdown into doing what we're doing at this moment, is doing the podcast as well, which is, that became like a totally different... It's like radio and podcasting are very, very different. Would you agree that they're completely...
They're completely different, because I think you have a little bit more freedom on the podcast, and on the radio, like, you know, you've only 60 seconds or 90 seconds between two songs. You can't really express yourself and get into the nitty gritty. And sometimes I go on my social media and I say something terrible is after happening to me in the last week or two, but I'm not going to tell you what it is now on Instagram.
Yeah.
Because I can't explain it to you in 90 seconds. Like, even if I have a skin problem, I had dermatitis on my skin or whatever, and people were slagging me, oh, look at your man off getting a facial at 2 o'clock on a Tuesday. The last place I wanted to be was getting a facial on a Tuesday, but I was trying to fight this dermatitis I had. And that's the beauty about podcasts. Like, we wouldn't be able to talk about your anxiety on The Breakfast Show.
No, Jesus, not a place for it. No.
People would be saying, you know,
we'll turn that fella off.
Will you fucking play Bruce Springsteen and shut up? Do you know?
Oh, congratulations, Brendan, on your 25 years. My name is David. Not Dave, David.
Oh, you don't like when people call
oh,
you Dave?
No, no, not a fan of the Dave.
I'm loving this chat, and I hope people are enjoying it as much as we are, because we're two radio heads talking about radio, and, yeah. I hope it's interesting for people that don't know.
Yeah.
But it's, I love the behind the scenes stuff that people don't know about. I love the chaos.
Mm.
And I love, like, there was one morning I was filling in for you. And here I was, right? So I worked in Midwest years ago, and I did the weekend breakfast show for a couple of months.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
And do you know what it was at the time? Chris Carroll came along and he says, we're going to get some young fella in Castlebar and he's going to be great and we're going to get a load of advertisers in Castlebar and everything will be mighty. So this young fella who was DJing a mantra at the same time was going doing the 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock breakfast show on Saturday morning, and it didn't work out, let's just say.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work
out. It didn't work out. So I was doing it for a few months. So I had done them a few months and then I had left and I had gone on to do other things. And then went through other radio stations. And then 10 years later, I think I came back to Midwest. But then I was filling in for you one morning and you are in the Castlebar studio.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never been really in the Castlebar studio. So I remember on the Friday, I went in and got the crash course on the Friday with you and you showed me how to use the Castlebar studio. Then the Monday morning came.
I remember this.
And the phone ringing and the phone ringing and the phone ringing. Alan. Where are you? Well, fuck it. I'm only after waking up, David. Where are you? Oh, I'm in the studio in Castlebar.
Oh, was I in at that stage?
I can't. What?
Or was I on the? I probably
you
was
were
on the
on
way.
On the way in, or somebody had rang you anyway. And I said, "Oh well, fuck it. I've slept in, David. Oh my god." And then I came in here to the studio in Castlebar, which is 5 minutes from my house, 10 minutes from your house. And on your first day off that week, you sat there in the corner. Of your own fucking studio, of your own breakfast show, watching me doing the whole show for that morning.
You did fabulous.
And I never felt like a bigger prick since. Never. I'm here covering for you, giving you a day off, giving you a good deserved lie-in, and you're sitting there in the corner watching me pushing the buttons for the whole morning.
But you know what? For me, it's like a busman's holiday because I don't have to push the buttons.
It was shocking, and I've never recovered from that. I feel so bad about that.
Ah, we stop it. I always say, you know, nobody in the end of the day really cares, because it's the old days. It was there was nothing on the radio at night. We went off at 1, we started at 7. Now there's music, so in worst came to the worst, the music was still play,
yeah,
and people won't notice, and the other time where a connection wouldn't happen for me, so they might hear two songs in a row and they go, oh, your man has slept in,
yeah,
and I go, no, there's something here that's technically not working for me. But look at that, can happen
was
to
there,
anybody.
Was there a story of a breakfast show presenter going to sleep in the chair one morning?
Yeah there was, yeah.
What happened there? We won't mention any names.
No, put on a long song and fell asleep. Put on something like the Eagles or something and fell fast asleep.
7 minutes long.
Yeah, and woke up with just a bit of silence going. You know, the silence woke him up. He was like, why is everything so silent? That same person, people won't know this, and again, this is behind the scenes, but before we get our news at 7 and 8, we get a countdown, of a 60-second countdown. So it could, because, and that your news happens exactly when it's supposed to happen. So
it comes down via satellite.
Yeah, so the next, it goes 60 seconds to broadcast, and it'll count you down. And this particular person, who, if they were working the night before, used to stay in the studio, and they would leave that on, and they would be fast asleep, and then they would hear 60 seconds to broadcast, and they go, up, up, better get up!
Yeah. So he'd sit in the chair with the...
With the
fader
the
up.
Fader listening, the pre-fade, pre-fade listen, and listening, and then 60 seconds, ah!
That was his alarm clock.
That was the alarm clock running and do that, yeah. I wouldn't be able to speak for the first 40 minutes.
The biggest compliment I've ever been told in my whole career of radio is, you're brilliant at the death notices.
Oh yeah.
And for anyone who doesn't know, our bosses have to get you kicking and screaming into the studio to read the death notices.
Yeah.
I find it one of the most intimidating things you could ever do in your life, because you have 20 families in your hand that are grieving, and all they want to do is hear their loved one's name and village and townland read out on the radio and let their friends and family know. And then this bollocks comes on and he goes, it's not Gertha Genny, it's Gertha Fanny. And whatever it is, there was one morning I said bacon.
Yeah. You said beacon instead of bacon.
So it's B-E-K-A-N.
That's how it's spelled, yeah.
B-E-K-A-N, that's how it's spelled.
Beacon.
So I came on the radio one morning saying something happened in Beacon.
Yeah.
And oh my God, yeah, you'd swear I shot someone.
It's bacon.
It's bacon.
Yeah. You know, I haven't done or read them out since 2003. So 20 years I haven't read them out. Because I used to read them all the time, not a bother. Because, you know, they're words. Mm. And you have to look at them as words. You can't look at them as what they are.
It's the scariest, most intimidating thing I've ever done in my life.
And my dad's best friend was in them. And I was conscious that I was coming towards him. And suddenly they went from being words to being people. And suddenly I found my voice changing, the breath shortening. And I went, I'm just going to get through this and I will never do it again. And I never did.
Yeah.
I never did. No, because I didn't have the voice for it anyway. You know, the happy fucker in the morning.
People don't realise behind the scenes. They just take these things for granted. There's the news, there's the weather, there's the deaths. But they don't understand the anxiety or the real people behind them.
Yeah. And of course, radio is live. It's all live. There's no pre-recorded. We do everything live. So you just have to get on with it. Which is different than a podcast, because a podcast is pre-recorded.
During lockdown, I was doing Farming Scene.
Oh, you did?
I got roasted for saying weanlings. Well, there's one fella that drives around Castlebar. Until this day, I'd say it's 3 years since I said weanlings.
Yeah.
And any time I meet him, he shouts out the window at me, weanlings! They're weanlings!
Or yo. Yo was another one. Yo. A sheep. Yeah. Yo. Yeah. You would get caught. There's a lot of that. The education goes on. I'm 25 years and something could crop up on the screen in front of me now and I go, oh, I don't know what that is or how to pronounce it. I haven't a clue.
But it was a real proud moment for me when this lady, she lives out my road, and she says to me, you know, you're brilliant at the debts. And that was like, that was honestly probably the, like, I had won a bronze radio award with Galway Bay FM and I thought that was the fucking
the
shit.
Highlight.
But then, do you know what? When I sat back and I realised, you know, there's this woman in my community that I have great respect for. When she turns around and she goes, you're lovely at reading the debts. I thought, isn't that, that's the pinnacle of my career in radio.
Exactly.
That I have, somebody has enjoyed me reading the debt notices. Do you have any stories of complete carnage behind the scenes that no one knows about?
Ooh. I have a story of once there was a presenter with me who went out during, actually I think it was during the death notices, went out and went to the bathroom and the death notice had finished and I was very new, I was reading them and I was on the wrong side of the desk, so I wasn't near the technical stuff to stop.
All right,
it
hang on, so you're the other side of the desk?
Yeah, I'm the other side of the desk.
So there's nothing on the other side?
No, all the equipment and to move to your ad break is where he was.
And he went to the bathroom?
So I have a microphone.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished the death notices and he's not back.
Oh,
right?
I understand now.
And
so you're standing in front of a microphone.
Yeah.
With no buttons.
Yeah.
And you're finished your job.
And I have to keep just saying something.
So at the end of the deaths you say, our thoughts and prayers are with the family, blah, blah, rest in peace.
I made up a prayer.
What?
I made up a bit of a prayer. I went with what I thought was right. And it wasn't right. It was completely wrong. I was just trying to pad it out.
Can we just break this down here for a second? Because this is the best story I've ever heard. So you're reading the debts and you're getting towards the end of them.
Yeah, go
and
on.
And in your
he's,
head,
he's not back. He's
in
not
your
back.
Head, you're saying, right, I've one death left.
Yeah, he's not back.
He's not back here yet. What am I going to do after I read out this Bridie Omeriku the death has occurred of?
Yeah.
And that's it going on in your head the whole time.
And as I'm making up this new prayer, I can hear... I can hear the thuds of the guy running, right? Runs by me as I've gone completely puce red because I know.
So what's the prayer? You're there, Sarah, going, may the souls of the faith and the...
I'm extending that.
And the angels all be merciful. Amen. And he's gone.
So what? Well, the worst thing that happens, of course, because he sits down. And because he's after running like, quicker than Usain Bolt, he's out of breath. So when he starts reading, it sounds like he's laughing at me.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
I think there was 3 or 4 days there now where we had to stay very quiet.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Was there a lot of complaints?
Yeah, very, very unhappy about that. Very that I was being disrespectful and worse, he was laughing at me. And which wasn't the reality at all. It was totally, you know, it was one of those things that just happened.
And did they understand? Did your bosses understand? Like,
Did
you ever get in bother?
Oh, dear. Let me.
I got in bother one morning. We were talking about the price of coffee.
Oh.
And I had said to my co-presenter, guess how much this coffee was, and I held it up.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, it was the time the price of coffee beans went up. And I said, he said, how much? And I said, it's $4.20. And he goes, and the name of the brand was Frank and Honest.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes, well, it's Frank, but I can tell you it's dishonest. And at 9 o'clock that morning,
you were dragged in.
We come out of the studio.
It's a great show.
Great show. Great show, everyone. Well done. All the suits lined up in reception.
Oh, you're joking.
Upstairs. They were trying to get us sacked.
Oh.
And rightly so.
Mm.
Rightly so. Defamation.
Yeah.
Whatever it was.
Yeah.
We said, you know, and we had to fight for and beg for our job. Yeah. We begged. We said we'd go around to every centre in the county and we'd drink coffee and we'd fucking wear Frank and Honest shirts and t-shirts. I'd paint the car Frank and Honest. I'd say I'm the most honest person there ever was.
Yeah.
And we had to fight for our job.
I think since the day I've been in, we've been very, very aware of who pays our wages and what pays our wages. So I don't know if I've probably, you have to be very careful on that, that you don't insult.
That's
probably one I haven't thought about really too much. There has been other situations where I have said the wrong thing and you do get a lot of kickback from it. And I'm not great at the kickback. I'm not good at taking the kickback. I will take the kickback home with me and I will live with the kickback for quite a while and I'll blame myself for it. But
there was one morning I was reading the weather and instead of saying scattered showers, I said scours.
Yeah, scattered scours.
Scours, yeah.
I did play, a song not that long ago actually. You know, modern songs have all the wrong, you know, you have to look for the radio edit.
Yeah.
And I mentioned, we have to look for...
WAP.
Well, it wasn't quite as bad as WAP now. But it did, and I was absolutely puce. And then I realised that actually, you know, I think one person heard it, but nobody else. Or if they did hear it, they just went, ha! But you know, I always say about, you know, if you like the song that you hear on the radio with us, a new pop song that's out, if you like it, just be very careful if you're downloading it for your kids. Because the version we play is very different. Olivia Rodrigo. Olivia, thinks she's brilliant. But mother of God, you can drop some of the fucks.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. There's no need for them.
There's no need for them at all. Yeah, we used to say back, they say now that, you know, I think the amount of sex in songs has dropped by 80%. Have you heard this?
No.
So these days, all new music, like used to always about love and I want to make love to you and you're like, all that, I want to make love to you in the hen house, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Now that's kind of gone. They've got rid of it because young people are not interested in that. But I said they're gone way more interested in the bad language because every song comes out and you go, are you sure? I mean, I would listen to it and go, no, I don't know, definitely. Sam Fender, why? So we've, like, you see clean version, you see... It's very gifted.
Yeah, and some of the songs you're playing then just have gaps in them because they don't replace the word.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they do that. Yeah. They just whap it out.
Yeah. It's really interesting that 20 years ago when there'd be an outside broadcast, so you'd come to Castlebar and do an outside broadcast, and it was like you said, you were the biggest celebrity. There'd be hundreds of people there for the broadcast.
The first outside broadcast I did as a breakfast show presenter on a breakfast show was about 4 months ago.
Wow.
Oh, no, maybe a year ago. Yeah, it was the first time my breakfast show ever went out on the road. And I have a funny story about that because we were opening a wonderful store in Ballina and it was a beautiful morning and everything was great and we were parked there and at 10 to 7 I was all me jolly self. And, isn't it great? Look at me, I'm allowed out. It's fabulous. And we'd set up and we'd all... And the next thing, bing, 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 on the window. And the angriest man in the world. I was like, good morning, how are you? Thanks, how are you doing? How are you keeping? You turned that shit down. I said, sorry? Sorry, you want to hear what? You turned that shit down.
So the speakers were outside the outside broadcast unit, blaring, wake me up before you go.
And he was fast asleep in his bed.
And you're here opening up a new store.
Yeah, and he's in the pyjamas and all. I'm like, oh, jeez, he's not. I said, well, you're good, turn it down. Yeah.
And him ripping.
Yeah, ripping. But I had done other outside broadcasts, but not, like in the first days, I remember when we got the first mobile unit, which would have been actually, I think it was 98 or close enough to that. And I remember the crowds that turned out to see the new satellite cruiser was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
Now, that's changed over the years. Now you're pretty much getting in their way sometimes. You're like, look at these fellas, will you get out of my way?
Yeah.
But back then it was a big event for the town. You know, any town. When you went to towns and villages, it was a big event. People used to come out and say hello to you, and it was lovely. It was a real lovely thing.
Yeah, it still is a big event for Midwest, thank God.
Yeah.
Not so much for other stations where they're just kind of there in the corner with a table now and a few balloons and...
Yeah, you know. No, it's an important... you know, we always say about... it's your only chance to meet one-to-one the punter.
Yeah.
So you should always look your best, be in your best form, and do your best... Because that's the only time the rest of the, you know, because if we walked down the street today, you know, me and you, they'd all recognise you, but nobody recognise me because I've been hidden behind a microphone for 25 years.
You've never gone onto the social media side of things or
no,
whatever.
Not, I've started, I'm open to that a lot more now. I'm open to it. I mean, I think my sister-in-law is responsible for opening my brain to social media a bit more.
Your sister-in-law is Sarah Butler.
Yeah, Sarah Butler. So a lot of people in social media terms will know who Sarah Butler is. Sarah started her, she loves it when I say her journey, right? She loves that.
Yeah, so
journey.
For people who don't know, tell us about Sarah.
Right, okay. So Sarah is a sister of Jane, who I'm married to. Mm-hmm. And she's also a very close friend, so we get on very well. So Sarah was again the family that I married into, and I mean this really lovely and positively. Sometimes you just have to hold on to the coattails because they're going and you just have to go with them. And honestly, since I've been doing 25 years of radio, I'm married to a woman who was in insurance, then she was an auctioneer, then she worked as a beautician, and now she's a very successful reflexologist. And
brilliant.
She's her own business, and I just get the, I'm doing this now, and I'm doing this tomorrow, and we're doing this, and we're moving here, and we've done that. So you just have to go with it. So Sarah was doing, she was designing. She was a designer of like wedding stationery, websites, car vehicles, all that kind of stuff. But she loved cooking. So started cooking.
Yeah.
And started sharing her cooking with Instagram. And I remember like, you know, sitting with her in the car, 200 followers, 1,000 followers. 2,000 followers.
Yeah, and then the balloons would come in.
And 2K. She continued to be herself, to cook, to do what she believes in, still does to this day. Audience starts increasing. She releases a book. Book is fabulous. I say to her, again, I come back to holding on to the coattails. I say to her, you know, you should think about doing a podcast, you know, because it gets you out there and it's a different form. You know, people like podcasts these days and it's a different form of entertainment and shows a different side to you.
Yeah.
You know, I always say, like, if you want the fellow who's pretending or the fellow who's acting, you listen to me on the radio. But if you want the real me, you go to the podcast. But, and you know, I said, we could talk about what we could talk about. And she was like, can we do it now? I go, what? Can we do it today?
Hit record.
Like, no, let's just do it now. Just start the record there now, like a good lad. And I think we're 64 episodes in.
Wow.
Now, we've slowed down. So this year, there's only been a handful, I think 4 or 5 maybe, reflective on how busy that she is.
Yeah, she's fantastic. So for people that don't know her page, now the thing about Sarah is, her page is called Sarah Butler at Home Official. The thing about Sarah is, you kind of said there, you know, she just started cooking and she put up a few videos and then she got to 2,000 and now she's 130,000. Her very first video was just as professional as her last video.
Yeah.
That she shared last night. Her professionalism is second to none.
Mm-hmm.
And the time and effort she puts into all her work is second to none.
I've said this before. I would give her a script to read in radio terms, which is not, it's very different, as you know, and one take's done. Yeah. What else do you want me to do?
Yeah, she's so professional.
It's just, it's bang, 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 and it's, but you do have to hold on sometimes and just go, okay, we're doing this today, we're doing this now.
And the other thing that's really admirable about her is that she never changed.
No.
An awful lot of influencers and content creators will try something for a few months and then they'll go from this, that, to the other. I'd say if somebody selling trees offered her 20 grand and said, here, will you promote our trees?
Yeah.
She'd say no.
Not unless she believes in the trees.
Not unless you believe in the tree.
And she's always, she believes. And you know something about it? Her passion is for cooking.
Yeah.
And that is born out. Their whole family, I'm married to one. That's what they're passionate to. Taste, to eat, to use the food that you buy, not to waste, to stop using simple products to make delicious food. And as you know, at this stage, by the time this goes out, her third book is out there in the universe and she's doing home comfort foods and she is doing fabulous and a force of nature. And I said to her, you know what? I'd say this to you as well, Alan. The thing about you is that it's just... You just keep going and you keep going and you keep going and you keep setting the bar higher and higher and higher and higher. And I as a person who's done 25 years of a radio job, just admire that massively. I think I'd love that energy. I'd love that, just that ability to say, we're just going to go for this. There's nothing else. I have no fallback plan. This is it. And I think that's, I admire that about, particularly in a town like Castlebar.
Yeah. Well, with me, it's just I've no choice but to keep going. So I don't know. But look, if you're looking for a Christmas gift idea, check out Sarah Butler's new book. It's her third book. It's out now. Comfort Food. SarahButlerAtHome.com. So pick that up.
And don't forget our podcast.
And don't forget to check out your podcast.
Yeah, I appear in the photograph, but not in the name. It's the Sarah Butler at Home podcast.
And when we're at it, sure, we'll have to give Jane a plug.
Yeah.
What's the name of Jane's business?
She's Jane's Reflexologist. I think you'll find her. You'll find her on Instagram as well. She has an office at the house.
Right.
So a little cabin, built a little cabin at the side. Again, nothing to do with me, right? Absolutely. I came home, this fella's setting up a cabin.
There's a crane in the back garden. And, Christ.
What's this for? this is kind of at the end of lockdown. Are we building a little pub for me? No.
A man cave.
This is where I'm going to do my business from. And has gone in there, has learnt everything about it, has studied and studied and studied and studied. And is exactly, as I always say to her, you're exactly where you want to be. You set the target. This, and I go, ah, I'm happy now. She's doing what she wants to do. And then I go, probably next month, you know what I'm going to be now? Pilot.
I'm going into Thailand. Thailand kitchen,
you know,
floors.
We were talking to neighbours of ours, and the woman in the house was telling Jane that she does all the Thailand.
Yeah.
And I was saying, that is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel absolutely fabulous. If I could change a plug.
If I change a light bulb, I feel like a man.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I fixed the dishwasher. What did you do with it? I pressed drain.
I turned it on and off again.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Isn't it really brave and admirable that a lady at Jane's stage in life, and I mean that in the nicest way possible, can just say, no, I'm going to do something different now.
Yeah.
Because everyone gets into the same rut, and this is what I'm always talking to people about, is they just get so safe and secure, but that comes with a lot of misery.
Yeah.
People then are just saying, well, sure, I couldn't leave this job.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's money at the end of the week.
25 years.
And then you go back and you train yourself and teach yourself a new career and then open a business. And for it to be successful like that, that has to be commended.
I have a funny story, because she did come from an insurance background. She was worked in Hibernian Insurance in Dublin, was a team leader there, became an auctioneer in Castlebar. And then when obviously the boom was gone, decided to become a beautician. And there was one stage when she was studying to be a beautician, and she was at the course, it might have been in Galway, whatever, and there was a number of them lined up, and there was a woman doing a particular thing on a person at the top of the room, right?
Was it waxing a fanny?
It must have been something like that, right? and Jane said to herself, Jesus, how did I end up here?
I had to laugh. That's so funny. 12 fannies all lined up down the room. I have suddenly realised I don't want to do this job.
But always loved the benefits of reflexology, and that's what she wanted to do. I mean, you know, I couldn't do that job. People's feet, you're joking me.
Yeah.
But does it, and does Indian head massage, and does ear candling, that kind of stuff, but does it at her own pace and the way she wants to, and she's built up a lovely clientele, and she works mainly from home, the odd time out and about, and it has been a massive success for her, and I'm delighted because she's doing what she wants to do.
That's fantastic. Look, I've held up enough of your time. I have held up your nap, your Friday afternoon nap time.
Yeah, I think now
you won't get a nap today. Now,
as your man in Belmullet said to you that day, let's go straight to the pub.
There'll be some amount of road rage on the way home now today. You'll be like a cunt going home.
can you say that word on your podcast?
You can say whatever you want. You can say whatever you want on your podcast. David, thanks a million for all your hard work over the last 25 years, and I mean that, and I'm not just blowing smoke up your arse or spoofing you, because you are a pillar of the community, and you're so important. You're the first voice people hear in the morning in the West and Northwest, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, and I'm sure you don't appreciate that. I'm sure you don't acknowledge.
No, you don't let that in.
You don't let that in.
No.
But you are...
I'm still Shmoly Cawley from Lakeshore Drive.
Yeah, no, you are so important, and you're so easy to listen to, because now in 2023, I think, and I don't know if this is just me, will people agree with me or not, maybe let me know if you agree or not, radio is so hard to listen to. And it's like, Howie, what's your favourite sandwich? Text me in 515152. Did you ever have a ham in a sandwich? And you're driving along going, would you just shut that up?
Yeah.
But you in the morning, you're just easy to listen to. You're relatable. The music's good. It's always upbeat. It's a bit of crack. Yeah. And a bit of banter with yourself and Michael D. A bit of banter with yourself and Tommy. I like when he comes in and calls you good boy. Good boy. At 50 years of age. Just keep
good
you
boy.
Keep you down there. I'm going to pat you on the top of the head there. Good boy.
Do you know, it's and you're making such a difference. I got a text the last day to say, you know, congrats on your 25 years. Now, would you play my old Sligo Home? 25 years. I don't think I've ever played my old Sligo Home. I don't think so. I don't know. I think that's probably the legacy that I leave behind. They go, I used to play the odd country song, but very rarely.
Do you have a favourite song of all time?
Oh, several. I have a top two that keep switching.
Right, if you were to die tomorrow.
Yeah.
And we had to play a song at your funeral. God forbid that never happens.
Yeah. God Only Knows the Beach Boys. Do you know that? Do you know this? It's featured at the end of that
really
Love Actually.
Slow intro to that one, is there?
You know, it's like a bit Jingle Bells at the, right. But it's the it's at the end of Love Actually, where they're at the airport and they're all welcoming each other back. But I loved it long before that. And the second one would be Wichita Linesman.
Wichita Linesman.
Glen Campbell.
Didn't see that coming.
Biggest regret in my life. Biggest regret in my life was Glen Campbell, and he wasn't well. Played in the Royal Theatre in Castlebar, and it was a Sunday night, Alan. It was a Sunday night.
You sounded a bit like Pádraig Flynn there. Went to England, came home, made a lot of money, out of sorts.
I met him. He's a Sligo man who went to England, made a lot of money, came back, didn't work out for him. He's not well, and he's out of sorts.
He wasn't well.
He came to Castlebar, and it was a Sunday night. Wow. So on a Sunday night, I said, well, I can't go because it's a Sunday night. And I didn't go to see him.
Oh, no.
And honestly, his story and his music and his voice. I know, I catch myself every now and then going, this is the fella that liked acid jazz and house music, yeah, and dance and Jamiroquai. I love it. I absolutely think he was just brilliant. And his Wichita Linesman is just a stunning song.
It wasn't until I'd done my show in the TF a few weeks ago that I realised the names that have come there.
Yeah.
Like they have all the names,
yeah,
framed around the cafe bar.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Campbell.
They gave him a Bowron.
Johnny Cash.
Johnny Cash, yeah. Johnny Cash. I remember seeing Status Quo on the 9th of November, yeah, 1990. There was more equipment than there was people. Mm. It was just mad. It's such a wonderful facility to have in the west of Ireland. I've laughed in there. I've cried in there. I've been on my own in the Royal Theatre the odd time. It's just, there's bands that you never, what did you go? Snow Patrol, they played there a few years ago.
Yeah, they did.
And there's another fella, some fella, he's from up Pashnugborough. He sold it out, I believe, and he sold it out again.
I believe he was the first man to sell it out this year.
And he's some fella from Ballina with them and all. And
that fella with a beard.
Yeah, that fella with a beard, I had played a clip from him on my radio show this morning because about the animal bars. No, I played, it was a clean bit.
I was going to say, my face lit up there when you said, you did well to find one without the cursing on it.
It was about the animal bars being cancelled and he wasn't happy. And he's right. He's right all the way.
He's not happy. Will you last another 25 years doing the breakfast show?
No. That question is asked a lot, and I have the humour sanctions. I don't know if we'll last another 25 minutes, but I really, genuinely, honestly, I don't think so. But I will keep going as long as my mind and my body allow me to do the early mornings. You know, I have two children. They're the loves of my life.
What ages are they?
You see, there you go. One's in Leaving Cert and one's in second year. And as they start, and that journey seems to happen really quick. So once they start departing the nest, then I suppose I'll reflect on, does it still suit me or what? Because as I cross that threshold of the 5-0, I suppose I'm looking at probably if you want to make a leap or do something, that might be the final chance. Now, saying that, I'm very, very happy with the job I have. I really am. I wouldn't stay in it if I wasn't. And I give out about the early mornings and I give out about this and I give out about that. But the reality is that I'm there. I love the people I work with. Really, I'm awful lucky to. You know, we talk about Jerry Lennon, and people probably won't know that since COVID, I've worked in a different studio than they work in, than my main head office.
Yeah.
He rings me every day, 9:10 every morning. Yeah. He'd ring me, check in every day. The odd text of the weekend, we check in because we're actually friends. And people find that amazing about it.
Jerry Glennon is one of my favourite people of all time. And when I started in Midwest, I looked up to him. Jerry Glennon was my Jerry Ryan.
Yeah.
You know, I looked at Jerry Glennon the exact same way as I looked at Jerry Ryan.
Yeah.
And what I really love about Jerry and what people don't know behind the scenes is Jerry is an Anne Monaghan.
Yeah. Absolutely.
He treats you like a human. He doesn't talk to you. He doesn't think you're stupid. He doesn't treat you like you're stupid. You might be stupid.
Yeah.
But he won't talk to you like you're stupid. And he's so helpful. And he wants you to succeed. Because in this industry, there's a lot of people that don't want you to
succeed.
Don't want
to succeed, yeah. Well, we started, myself and Angelina started the TV show. We did a country music TV, American country music. I mean, two people who knew nothing about American country music. But we did the show for 2 years. And on the first day, I was in front of a camera going, I don't know where to look. I don't know what to say. I don't know what my chins are showing. I don't know anything.
Yeah.
And I said to Jerry, just give me the truth. Warts and all. And he sat, he studied, and I went, oh, I'm in for a bollock in here now about something. And he just went, no, you know what? He said, it's all there. Maybe look at bit at this more. Maybe look at her a bit more.
Yeah.
But it's there. And I'd be very happy with that.
And he's a very diplomatic way about him as well, because I asked him about a song one day and I said, Jerry, do you think I could play this song? And rather than say, no, you can't play that song, he just goes, and I'll never forget it, it wouldn't be the done thing, Cocking.
You don't need to say anything else.
And that was it. Thanks, Jerry.
Eject.
I won't bother playing that song. David, thank you so much indeed for your time.
Pleasure.
I could chat to you, honestly now, I could chat to you for hours.
Yeah, it's been a joy and a pleasure. And I never talk about myself and I don't like it, but...
I hope we can do it again.
Oh, Jesus. Next week.
Would you? Let's do it every Friday. I'd say there'll be demand for it now after listening to this.
Never feels like work. I actually really, really... enjoy it. And I, as I said to you before, I think sometimes the real me comes out in the podcast. For example, I had no intention of telling you about my first panic attack at 21 today, but it's just what happens on podcasts.
But it's going to help so many people.
Well, I hope it does.
No, it definitely will.
I remember a woman saying to me once, someday you'll talk about it. And I was like, I don't think so. I'll climb up my own arse before I'll do that.
Yeah.
But actually, I think if somebody goes, you know what, I felt that too.
Because like that, I used to secretly see a woman every Wednesday.
Mm.
I used to drive 2 hours from Galway.
Yeah.
Secretly to go and see a woman and talk to her for an hour.
Yeah.
And I'd be exhausted.
Yes.
And then I'd have to drive home and go to sleep.
There you go.
And I never told anyone.
Yeah, there
and
you go.
Now I have no problem telling people.
Not either have I. And I say the first thing to people, in whatever form you're in or whatever is pulling at your heels or dragging you down or whatever you think you can't say, and sometimes you can't say it to the person you love the most.
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes somebody else.
That's true.
You just have to put up the hand and say, today, and I said this on the radio all the time, you know, I go, today, if you're not feeling it today, if today is not your day, if you're up there and you're listening to that happy head in them and you're thinking today is not your day, you just give us a call, just give us a text, just we will acknowledge who you are and what's going on, and we can point you in the right direction to somebody that might be able to just make life a tiny bit easier. And if you can do that for people, I think that is half the battle. But if you can do it for yourself, you know, I always say to people, they say, oh, she did a 5,000 year course in psychology, you know, and I go, well, do you ever have a panic attack, an anxiety or any of those disorders? No, don't understand that. You have to have it to know what it's like, to have empathy for people who have these type of things. And, you know, these days, the demand on our children and on our minds, you know, I say this about my 14-year-old son, because he's 14 in a week's time. I say to him, when I was 14, playing in Lakeshore Drive, climbing trees, making tree houses and building huts and going out on the lake and telling my parents, no, we didn't go out on the lake. I didn't know probably at that stage who the president of America was. I didn't know because it didn't matter to me. I probably didn't know who the Taoiseach was. Mm. But our kids, the demand is there 24 hours a day at all times on them. I'll leave you with this one, and it's the reality of our phones. It's been how the phone can take over your life. So I'm lucky that our children leave the phone on the kitchen table. They don't bring it to the rooms, you know. But when I get up in the morning at 4 o'clock and their phones are there, you could just flick over their phone and there could be 80 messages. There could be something else. And they could be coming in at that moment. Bleep,
yeah.
Bleep, bleep. And I go, how can that be? At what stage are these kids allowed to just switch off their minds and sit and be with themselves? You know the way they come to you, Dad, I'm bored, I'm really bored. I go, that's the best thing I've heard all day. You shall remain bored for the next half an hour, because being bored and allowing yourself to sit in your own comfort and be bored by yourself is a wonderful thing.
David Cawley, it's very hard to find people that are so open and honest for this podcast. That's my hardest challenge.
Ooh.
And you've been very open and honest. And I really appreciate it.
Good. When we finish up now, I have something I want to show you. It's on my body. It's a kind of a sore thing.
Oh, jeez, I'm no good at that now.
Look at it there. My own dog did that.
So the next time you're up at 7 o'clock in the morning, tune into Midwest Radio. David Cawley, he's on from 7 till 8:45, then he goes home and he's gone then for the rest of the day and he's nothing else to do for the rest of the day.
Nothing else, only eat.
Only eat. Thanks a million, David.
Bye.
Keep her late.
Bye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Big News Coming Soon podcast is proudly sponsored by B.O.R.B. Homes. B.O.R.B. Homes is Ireland's number one award-winning manufacturer of factory-built homes. We take your home from start to finish. Our homes are A-rated and meet planning regulations. We build to your requirements and your budget. The cost includes your home being turnkey and our chartered engineers' fees. Please get in touch for a viewing of our show homes, a brochure, or for more information. Let BRB Homes take the stress out of your build. Check out brbhomes.ie.